Hello and welcome. It's Monday, January 23rd. This is the front page, and I am your host, Racing Post editor Tom Kerr. Over the next half an hour, we'll have plenty of discussion about three of the biggest stories in the racing world. But as usual, we would love your views as well. So please do like, comment, subscribe, and share using the buttons down below. I'm delighted to be joined in the studio today by writer and broadcaster extraordinaire Maddie Playle. Welcome. And making her debut on the front page, Catherine McRae, one of the Racing Post's rising stars, feature writer, and much more besides. Maddie, we're going to come to you first, though, for your story. What's caught your eye over the last week?
Yeah, so we've not had much racing on track, but still been some really interesting news stories off track. And James Stevens, a colleague who's a frequent contributor to this show, he wrote a story on Thursday about the falling entries for the Cheltenham Festival. They've fallen by 35%. Lots of figures here for us to digest. We've obviously got 10 of the 28 races revealed in terms of entries. This year, 275. In 2022, we had 335. And if you go back to 2018, we had 415. Willie Mullins is responsible for 75 of those entries. That's 27% of all of them, which is just remarkable, really. And considering the strength in Depiazzi, he has 14 of the 28 favourites for the Cheltenham Festival races. And in the story that James wrote, Nicky Henderson was quoted as saying the Cheltenham Festival is not the be-all and end-all anymore. Trainers and owners are looking at other spring festival targets. But when you consider that just one race of those 10 wasn't the lowest since 2011, that was the Arkell, all the rest had the lowest entry numbers for upwards of 10 years. This brings some key themes into play. So there's a heavy concentration of power. We know that. We've seen that from Willie Mullins and his dominance. And also, I think there's a general change in attitudes and training techniques with regards to if trainers now they can't run their horses as often. You know, you can't just throw a horse in the Supreme Novices Hurdle anymore. You need to really target these races from a long way out. I've spoken to Dan Skelton actually quite a few times about this, and he's very insistent that you need a horse to be 150% to compete at these races. It's not like back in the day where you could probably throw a horse in at 80% fit and just have a go and be sportsmanlike. And we're seeing as well in Ireland how these horses are battle hardened. You know, they're used to dealing with these strong grade one races. And I think there's a palpable feeling of sort of discontent building, I think, ahead of this year's festival about this particular concentration of power. And obviously it doesn't help that we haven't seen a lot of horses in the last couple of weeks, but it makes for really uncompelling racing. And the question is, what do we do about it? Myself and Catherine, we could talk to you all day about Formula One. We're big Formula One fans. Well, you've seen in their sport how they've imposed a cost cap. They've changed their regulations to make it more competitive. What can racing do? I mean, colleague Chris Cook has often sort of been fighting from this corner to try and, for the BHA or to impose some sort of change. He suggested imposing a limit on the number of entries from any particular trainer. But there's just been no acknowledgement or response of this sort of dominance at all. And it looks like those sort of solutions are still a long way off. So we love the Cheltenham Festival. It's the biggest meeting. It's the home of jump racing. And we're all really looking forward to it. But at the same time, I think it needs to be acknowledged that we're seeing a trend now. Yeah. These things are cyclical. They will go in circles. We'll see other trainers have slightly stronger years. But overall, this is only going in one direction. And it's quite worrying.
I thought it was astonishing that you can combine the entries of Henry de Bromhead, Paul Nicholls and Nicky Henderson and you are still quite a significant distance behind Willie Mullins. But let's first of all look at Nicky Henderson's comments. So he said Cheltenham is not the be-all and end-all. What do you think, Catherine? Is that the truth?
I don't think so. I don't think you get many trainers who are coming in with their best horses in the yard and saying we're gunning for the Melling Chase this year. I think Cheltenham is still the target they're all aiming at, even if they're not going to say it out loud. And Nicky Henderson was one of the people who was pushing or happy for a five-day festival, which is kind of interesting now that he's saying that it's not as big a deal, perhaps, as it used to be. I think the concentration of the main yards is the kind of key point there. I think the top five trainers take up, you've got Nicky Henderson, Paul Nicholls, Henry Bromhead, Gordon Elliott and Willie Mullins make up over half the entries for these 10 races that are already out. And there's a big monopoly there. They are dominating all the entries. And a story later on in the week, talking to Kim Bailey, suggested that maybe early closing entries are warding off some of the smaller trainers.
Yeah, I think the entry system probably could be looked at and adjusted to encourage as many entries as possible. But fundamentally, it's this dominance which is the crucial factor. And it, I guess you use the word cyclical, but I don't think this trend itself is cyclical. No. I think the move towards concentration of power in a small number of hands, unless something is done by the regulator, like Chris Cook suggested, it's not going to reverse, put it that way. Maddie, like, what's in the consequences of this are in terms of racing's competitiveness, its appeal as a betting and a sporting spectacle?
I think you only need to look at the last couple of years for evidence that. And even this year, you look at Willie Mullins, there's a debate over which race Imperial Pass is going to go for because people see Fasal Vega as home and hoes. Now, obviously, that's testament to the brilliance of Fasal Vega and what we've seen from him already. But also, when you have horses from the same stable competing in the same races, which let's not, you know, accuse anyone of anything here. Willie Mullins does run more than one horse in the Supreme. He has done for many years now. I think I was looking at those statistics back a couple of weeks ago. But he has options. So you're not seeing the same caliber of horse taking on his other horses. And even if they're in other ownerships, he has such dominance and depth in his string that he can go, well, instead of running Sir Gerhard in the Supreme, we'll run him in the Ballymore and win that instead. And then that's going to have a knock-on effect in terms of warding off other trainers. And I think that does happen. You know, you look at the likes of Paul Nicholls, he's not skating away from running his horses in these races. He ran Stage Star in the Ballymore last year, for instance. But he just knows now that if his horses aren't good enough, he doesn't want to finish fourth, fifth. He'd rather win. And to do that, and to maximise his chance, he has to look elsewhere. So you can't blame anyone else. I think it's the distribution of these raw materials, these point-to-pointers, the big owners, Cheveley Park, JP McManus, who's shelled out a lot for a couple of horses recently, monopolising the sport as much as the trainers, because they're the ones who are choosing to send their horses to this small group of people. And that, in turn, just creates even more of a monopoly.
So you said before that you could talk all day about things we could do to address this, or that, you know, drawing inspiration from sports like Formula One. What would be top of your list as a potential solution, or at least mitigation?
That's a mean question, Tom. I think it's very difficult, because if you do that, then you're restricting trainers in terms of, you know, their quality and what they've shown to do. And people are going to perceive that as being unfair. So to do that in a fair way is going to be difficult, whether you subsidise and encourage smaller trainers. For instance, I was looking at Fontwell, I think, the other day. If you're travelling from, I think it's 150-mile radius to the course, they provide a bonus. Maybe something of the equivalent of that if you are a trainer that has under so many winners per year, or in prize money, your prize money tally has been less, maybe they can subsidise rather than taking away and restricting from the big trainers. But no, I don't have the magic answer, I'm afraid.
I think it's clear there's no easy solutions to this, but you know, the Formula One example is probably quite instructive, because Formula One does impose a very prescriptive range of regulations on cars, on the teams, in order to ensure that the sport is as competitive and compelling a spectacle as it possibly can be. You know, Catherine, should we be learning from that? Should racing be intervening more in order to, you know, quite deliberately create the environment for an ultra-competitive festival and other big events? Or do we continue in the sort of free market laissez-faire approach that the sport has embraced so far?
I think that there could be steps done to try and, as Maddie pointed out, you know, encourage smaller trainers to compete. But looking at Formula One as a comparison, they have the same issue that smaller, less funded teams can't compete to the same level. It is a case of money speaking, and these wealthier owners who send horses exclusively to these big yards are snapping up all the young horses, the good talent, and it's making it harder for small trainers to get these Cheltenham Festival style horses and have the ability to compete at the same level.
I know you spoke to Chris Gordon for your interview in today's paper, so nice little plug there. And he was saying in that same piece with Nicky Henderson that it's not the be-all and end-all for his owners. But equally, he spoke about feeding the grassroots. So just tell us about what he was talking about and how he struggled at that lower level.
Well, he obviously has not got the horses, perhaps, for Cheltenham Festival level. He's got, you know, Auk and Risk and Highway 102, which, you know, could possibly go to targets there. But he's more eyeing up some big handicaps that the Irish trainers probably are off their radar, like the Betfair Hurdle coming up. And yeah, he did say in that same story when he was saying that Cheltenham, you know, entries aren't important to him, that having a winner at Cheltenham, he had Unanswered Prayers win, and the impact that had, he had a lot of attention from that win at that meeting. So Cheltenham is, by his own admission, still important in track, even not at the festival at the earlier meetings.
I think it is the be-all and end-all. Yeah. I think we're lying if we're saying it's not.
And I agree.
Although Nicky Henderson might be saying, oh, well, we'll go and win this instead. Well, if you had the horse, Nicky, you'd be running.
I completely agree. Cheltenham is the pinnacle of our sport. Albeit, I fear its luster is being slightly damaged by this lack of competitiveness. But in a seamless segue from one pinnacle of the sport to another, we're going to move on to the second story this week, Catherine, and it's yours. What caught your eye?
Yes, well, I think the question of greatness has always come up in every sport. And this week we've had the answer that Flightline, who just retired this year, is, according to the Longines World Rankings, equal greatest horse alongside Frankel, given a rating of 140. Obviously, the ratings began in 1977, so it's excluding some horses that may rank among that, including Secretariat, perhaps the closest comparison to Flightline. But he was given this rating alongside Frankel, which is different from Racing Post ratings have Frankel 3 pounds ahead, Time Form, I think, have him 4 pounds ahead.
Yeah.
And in this case, which the Longines World Rankings are meant to be, they style themselves as the FIFA rankings for football or the ATP for tennis. It's meant to be the kind of definitive international measuring system. And I think him being ranked alongside Frankel has caused some people to think.
Yeah, it's fair to say it's caused a degree of controversy, which is, you know, after all, very much the point of these things. Look, let's cut to the chase. Where do you stand on it, Catherine?
I think Frankel is better than Flightline. I think Flightline is an incredible horse, and you know, you can't deny his ability, his winning margins. I think his shortest winning margin was 6 lengths, which is astounding. Mm. But there's things Frankel achieved that Flightline didn't fail to achieve, but never had perhaps the opportunity to achieve. He only ran for 2 seasons. He didn't have arguably as competitive rivals to run against. And there's no denying Flightline is the best horse in America since Secretariat. I think that's a fair statement that most people can agree to. Whether he's Frankel, I would say Frankel has that little bit of an edge. He's had the chance to prove himself more. And Flightline only ran 6 times. And
yeah.
I think there's still things we'll never know about Flightline. I don't know if we ever saw the limits of him. I think we had more questions answered about Frankel, and he proved more points.
Yeah. The lack of real racing there is definitely a frustration. It sort of reminds me of the massively inflated, I thought, figures that Cracksman recorded for his annual one stunning race per season. Where do you stand on it, Maddie? Do you think Flightline should be compared to Frankel?
I don't think you can rely on these ratings if a sort of barometer of brilliance is what you're after, realistically. It's, of course, very difficult to compare him, but that is the job of these ratings, and I don't think they've done the best job of it, to be honest, because there's just so much between the two. I mean, Frankel was brilliant at 2. Flightline didn't even race at 2. He had just the 6 starts. Frankel was a classic winner. Flightline didn't even contest any of the Triple Crown races. He had big breaks between his races. He was injured as a 2-year-old. We should mention that. But it's all about how you measure brilliance, isn't it? And for me personally, I think we've talked about it with Baid this season, the unbeaten records and the allure of wide margin wins in small fields doesn't do it for me. And we should note that dirt racing lends itself to that. Horses can be flattered on dirt from the way that the pace, pressure, and the way that the races are run. And Frankel, he proved it. You know, he went up in trip. He did it from an early age. He beat top class opposition. Now, Flightline, you know, they're the likes of Tabor and Life is Good are very good horses. There's no doubting that. And we will probably learn more about the strength of his form as time goes on. But I kind of agree with Keith Melrose on this, and that it was kind of a people-pleasing exercise. Oh, we'll just throw them 140s so that we can keep everyone happy.
He called it a dull fudge, which I loved. It's pretty brutal.
You can see the sort of political angle of this. We'll keep everyone happy and keep those relationships intact.
I should say the handicappers will absolutely insist that the politics did not come into it in the slightest iota. They sat there in their room and they came to this without any consideration of what it would feel like for Flightline's connections turning up in London and getting a rating £1 below Frankel.
Exactly. And you know, there are going to be, with everyone, there are going to be biases at play, but I think Frankel was the better horse. And I think this is a wider topic that we should discuss about how we measure greatness. I think any horse can put in one spectacular performance. Mm. It's about longevity. It's about overcoming obstacles, doing it in circumstances that are unique on different kinds of grounds, on different kinds of setups. And for me, Frankel's way ahead on that front.
Yeah, it would be good if they found a way to factor in versatility, longevity into these ratings, because you know, if Messi had only had one season and then retired, nobody will be acclaiming him the best footballer in the world. If Roger Federer had won one major, nobody will be acclaiming him the best of all time. So it's only in racing that you can really get away with this one stunning race, and that's you've entered the hall of the immortals, and you're kind of you're done. You can head off to stud without any further concerns. Just as a final point, Catherine, whenever we get a debate like this, some people always pop up and saying, well, it's pointless comparing horses from history. Where do you stand in it? Some people love it, some people hate it. Is it what the sport's about, or is it a pointless one?
I think it's what all sport's about. I think people love to compare generations of the greatest athletes in their sport, and it's one of the joys of sport. I think Flightline's trainer John Sadler said it was a joy killer comparing other horses, but it's part of the fun, isn't it? Trying to imagine how two horses would compare, and it is a bit of an impossible task, but these, as you said, these are what these rankings are meant to do. Whether you agree with them or not is another thing entirely, but it's a nice conversation to have, and it's great that even if you don't think he's as good as Frankel, he's the best of a decade, at least for sure, and it's special that he's come along.
Agreed. Well said. We'll finish up with my story from the last week, and I've been following the latest developments in a long-running saga featuring on this show and elsewhere, which is affordability checks. It's certainly erupted into the burning topic in the sport over the last week, with a broadening circle of officials stepping forward to condemn the intrusive checks which are being rolled out to punters at the behest of the Gambling Commission. In today's Racing Post, we've got the Chief Executive of the National Trainers Federation. Over the last week, we've had MPs, we've had punters such as Harry Findlay, we've had the Chief Executive of the Thoroughbred Group, which represents horsemen. And alongside all of this, we continue to just get an absolute torrent of emails and letters from readers, social media messages, complaining about being scooped up in these checks, being asked for bank statements and other intrusive personal documentation by their bookmakers, and if they refuse to provide it, by and large, being told your customer is no longer welcome. But the angle I'd like to focus on today, and that I think we ought to be discussing, is one that Lee Mottishead has raised in his column today. And it's basically saying, where are the racing voices in this discussion? Now, we've got racing officials and representatives of racing individuals, such as the Thoroughbred Group and the National Trainers Federation I've mentioned. but there's very few trainers, owners, jockeys speaking out. And, you know, as an example of this, we had a reporter at the Thoroughbred Rankings event midweek, and we said to them, given this was the burning topic in the media this week, you know, speak to the great and good of racing about the topic. And they did, and off the record, many of these individuals sort of voiced their concern, and they've talked about what a worrying impact it could have on the sport's finances. In 2019, the income from betting was $262 million to racing. It's a huge chunk of racing's income, but none of them wanted to speak on the record. It's a strange one, given that prize money, Maddie, is always such a hot topic, that something which is potentially going to have, in the words of their own representative, a catastrophic impact on the sport, does not excite anyone really high profile in the sport to stand up and say, hold on, what is going on here? This is a major, major issue.
Yeah, I was interested in the week we ran a story from Paul Roy, the owner of Corsa, he's owned Group 1 horses in the past, talk out about this. But I think we were talking about it beforehand, Tom, there's still sort of stigma when you talk about this connection between betting and racing and the importance of betting for racing's survival. And I think trainers, owners, jockeys can often see themselves as part of this, we use that word, don't we, the horseman sort of bubble. And, you know, they are the ones who are producing the horses and they are the ones who are providing, you know, this sport. But at the same time, it would not exist without punters. And that recognition probably still hasn't been acknowledged fully. Obviously, we know that these affordability checks are going to have huge ramifications. They already are doing. And we've spoke about it a lot on this show. So I share your frustration, but I think it's still to do with this trend of that's not our business. You know, that's a different side of the industry, when in actual fact, it's all about these different facets playing together. And it's about time that, as Lee touched upon in his column, this was touched upon and given oxygen, because the ramifications for the sport are huge.
I think it's always been the way of racing to sort of gloss over the direct link between betting and the sport's income. But the scale of that income from betting, Catherine, sort of illustrates that without it, or if these checks do have this sort of catastrophic impact, and they're already having a very severe impact on the sport as mentioned, racing would be massively diminished. It would not be drawing crowds of 70,000 to Cheltenham, for example.
No, of course not. And in the piece you mentioned, talking to Paul Roy, they also spoke to Roger Devlin, who co-owns Pal Driver, and was saying a familiar tale about prize money in Britain, saying that he gets more prize money finishing runner-up abroad than he does winning group races here. And the knock-on effect from money not going into the levy and not having that money going into prize money is going to be huge. You know, you've got casual punters who will just be turned off the thing entirely, and more serious punters who could be turned to unregulated sites. And the link between betting and racing is so entwined, and it is worrying that people in the industry are not wanting to kind of look that in the eye and recognise that this is going to impact every part of the sport.
And also, it's not the same, Tom, in other countries, is it? You look at Hong Kong, it's embraced there. You know, it's a huge part of their culture. Australia, another jurisdiction that really leans into the punting side of things and doesn't alienate people who like to have a bet. And I think we do that in this country. I mean, I think we need to communicate that, you know, it's not, you can be wise, professional, you can do it as a bit of fun, but often there's, you know, an incredible amount of research that goes behind having a bet, you know. And when we talk about these regulations, people aren't regulating how people decide to spend their money in countless other ways.
No,
it's really damaging.
One of the I was reviewing the latest emails that came in today, and one from a reader caught my eye because they drew a fantastic comparison, the idea that you could be a shopper at Tesco for sort of 10 years spending thousands of pounds a year on your groceries and wine and beer and all sorts in there, and then one day go in and they tap you on the shoulder and they say, I'm very sorry, but we've decided we no longer think you can afford to shop here. And just sort of, it brings home the madness of this. And, you know, one of the quotes from I think it was Harry Findlay this week, said the Gambling Commission do not understand betting. And this comes through very clearly because I think they are fundamentally well-intentioned. They want to ensure that there's checks and balances in place that prevents people who have addictions from...
And we should say, presumably, we all support that.
Absolutely.
We don't disagree with that. We don't debate that at all.
There needs to be protections, but it needs to be balanced against personal responsibility and the rights of the individual to do what they want to do with their own money. And obviously, that's a difficult balance to get right. But I think what's very starkly clear is the Gambling Commission, as they have currently approached it, have got it wildly wrong, and they are basically intruding on the rights of a vast number of normal people who, understandably, are not happy having to provide incredibly detailed personal financial documentation in order to have a bet. Just quickly on this one, there's two other points I wanted to quickly raise. The first is the latest that I'm hearing about the gambling review, the white paper, the government white paper, which obviously is looking at gambling laws in the round, but affordability checks might be one of the points considered. I'm continually told it's weeks away, but they've been saying this for over 12 months now, so technically true, but when it actually appears is another question. But it sounds like February is now the likeliest point, but we've heard that before, and wouldn't it be a surprise if it drifted until after the Cheltenham Festival? Now, the big question is, what will the review do about affordability checks? Because the industry is putting all of its chips, basically, on the commission being reined in and the government adopting a much more proportionate approach. Now, that's absolutely what I hear they favour. Paul Scully, the gambling minister, is from the sort of libertarian wing of the Conservative Party. However, I also understand that they are wrestling with the impossibility, if you like, of having affordability checks which are non-intrusive but also protect those who are at high risk. So whether they're going to come to a solution that actually reins in the Gambling Commission, I don't know. The other point, which I thought was very interesting, was a fine the Gambling Commission handed out this week, which is to a firm called Tonybet, who were apparently requesting documentation from customers when they withdrew winnings, but never when they made deposits. So this is a disturbing trend as well, because this sort of illustrates how bookmakers can actually use the Gambling Commission's own rules to effectively make it more difficult for their customers to get paid out. Bit of a shocker, that one.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, we've seen it before. The Gambling Commission are being quite heavy-handed, rightly so, when betting companies breach these regulations. And again, it turns us towards that theme that Catherine touched upon, that if people aren't going to be allowed to bet lawfully in a regulated space, then they're going to turn to other means, which is another thing that Lee touched upon in his column this week, which is going to open up another can of worms.
Well, indeed, we'll leave this topic there. I'm sure we'll be returning to it in due course. And now comes a point where we have to determine what goes on the front page. Now, needless to say, affordability checks are on the front page a great deal. The Cheltenham Festival is on the front page a great deal. But I think it's important to inject some variety in there. For that reason, we will put Flightliner Tranquil. And what better pair of cover stars than Flightliner Tranquil could you have? So congratulations, Catherine, on your debut.
Thank you.
You have the front page.
Beginner's luck.
Yes.
Okay, thank you so much for joining us for another episode of The Front Page. And thank you very much to my guests, Catherine and Maddie. Let me just close by directing you in the towards our Members Club offer, which is on the screen now. You get your first month for free, and it provides access to the full suite of Members Club tools and features, such as the digital newspaper, lots of great tipping, articles from all of our top writers, and so much more besides. And while you're at it, do download our new app, which is slick, fast, and full of fantastic Racing Post content to help you make your betting choices as wisely as possible. So that's it for this week. Thanks again for joining us, and please do come back next week when we'll have more news, debate, and insight on the front page.